Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Thanks very much for listening today. And as usual, if you are not subscribed to us, you can also find us on iTunes. And if you don't have an Apple device, you can get us on the Android app Stitcher. Stitcher.com, get the Freedom Report podcast. And now, back to the show. Today, my special guest is a professor. We got a brainiac here today. He is Edward Stringham, and he teaches economics at Trinity College in Connecticut. Edward, welcome to the show.
Hey, Austin. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Professor, I am so glad to hear from you. We haven't chatted in quite a while. Last time you and I worked together, it was on the old show Freedom Watch with the judge. You're quite the media personality yourself, and it looks like you've got a big hit article out today that I think that my audience would really be interested in reading. It's the New York Daily News, titled America's Out of Control Cop Kill Rate. You show a picture here of a famous case of a man who was killed who was running away from officers. And libertarians, we look at this issue and we see this in terms of civil rights, of civil liberties, as a modern civil rights issue. And certainly the tension between citizens and officers has resulted in a lot of violence and destruction of personal property, such as we've seen in Baltimore and in Ferguson, Missouri. And so I'm curious here, you've drawn some conclusions, but what do you think it is that's causing this? First, suss out the data for us. Just how many people are being killed by cops every year, and why do you think it is?
Well, historically, they actually didn't take good data on this, so a lot of it's self-reported by law enforcement agencies. So there was really no good statistics on how many Americans die at the hands of police. But more recently, there's a couple groups, and including the Washington Post is compiling a very detailed database of fatal police shootings of citizens. Another group is Killed by the Police, and they document each individual death by citizens at the hands of police. And what we know now is in 2014, there was 1,000 Americans killed by police. And what I've done in my article on America's Out of Control Cop Kill Rate is I calculate the homicide rate of police per 100,000 police, just like any other homicide rate. And I found that it's tremendously high if you compare it to the average citizen in America, in Europe, or even the average cop in other countries. The American cop kill rate per 100,000 cops is very high.
Now, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire here for just a second, Ed, and I like to play devil's advocate on my show because...
No, that's not true, Austin.
And I never like to contradict libertarians, but you're comparing us to Europe. I mean, like, what are you, some kind of French surrender monkey here? I mean, we all know that people in Europe are nowhere near as violent as the people in the United States, so isn't that a bit of a fallacy to try and compare our cop kill rates? Aren't we much more violent as a society than the citizens of Europe, the cheese-eating surrender monkeys?
Europeans do have a lower private homicide rate than the United States. They also have a lower cop-to-citizen homicide rate. So it is true that they do have lower homicide rates among all groups in Europe. But really the most important finding here is that if you look at the average American citizen homicide rate, compare that to the average cop homicide rate, it is magnitudes lower. The average American citizen homicide rate is 5 per 100,000 per year. So out of 100,000 people, unfortunately, 5 people are going to get killed, or 5 people are going to be killers, assuming no multiple homicides. But with the cops, it's actually 140 per 100,000. So we're talking magnitudes larger, over 30 times larger for the cops compared to the average citizens. Whereas in Europe, we've got basically, on average, 1 or 2 deaths per 100,000 among average citizens, and also among the police kill rate as well. So it is a major problem. It's a major anomaly that sticks out in the United States for American police being so much higher than all other groups, including American citizens.
But don't these people deserve it? Aren't they bad people and they're committing crimes?
Yeah, and that's the standard view that most people argue. So, for example, Eric Garner in Staten Island was selling on tax cigarettes, or Walker Scott in Charleston was guilty of fleeing after being stopped with a broken taillight. That is true. But since when do those types of infractions deserve the death penalty? And since when should the police be the judge, the jury, and the executioner in each of these cases? In many of these cases, the people are completely unarmed, guilty of at most a misdemeanor, and what we're seeing is the death penalty administered on the spot by the police.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, obviously Eric Garner was an egregious case, you know, being choked out for cigarettes, but, you know, the officers obviously didn't know that he would, you know, that he had asthma or suffering from any of that. But the tactics that we see do appear to be getting reined in. You know, that was deemed wrong. I guess it was, it's not illegal to perform a chokehold in New York, but it's against their training. So, I mean, again, playing devil's advocate here, I mean, do you think that this is an issue of our police, you know, getting out of control, or are they, aren't they just trying to do their jobs, and don't they have a right to just go home safe, Edward, and not have to worry about being killed by thugs?
In Germany, they let off a total of something like 100 bullets per year, and most of those are warning shots. A lot of the cases we've seen, the high-profile cases recently, the police don't even give off warning shots, and we're not talking about just a few. We're talking about 1,000 deaths last year, 400 deaths already this year. So in the first quarter, we're talking about almost 500 Americans being killed up to June 1st, 476 Americans being killed. So the rates are actually going up. They're not going down. So all of the talk that the police like to give about how they've moved towards community policing, they're not being abusive anymore, I think it's just cheap talk. Until we can see their homicide rates going down, then it's just cheap talk.
What can be done to reduce the high kill rate committed by American police?
Well, there's a few issues. One is we have a lot more police in the United States compared to a lot of other countries. So we don't necessarily need these standing armies that the police departments have become. The American revolutionaries had a rebellion against standing armies. Now we've got police who are weaponized by the U.S. military with military surplus material. They've got, in many cases, high-powered guns. They've got lots of leeway to enforce all types of laws, including the case in Baltimore where Freddie Gray was killed with a knife that was legal in Maryland but not in Baltimore. And so when we have all of these laws on the books, the police can basically pick somebody out and identify them as a criminal. And I think that's the major source of the problem. Other things we can think about in England, in New Zealand, in Iceland, Norway, Ireland, almost all police do not carry guns at all. And the police kill rates are much lower there. So I think that's something we should really think about. If we're not going to even have government police at all, questioning whether they need to be as armed to the teeth as they are, if they need to be so militarized.
Now, in your piece here, you talk about the option of relying on private security and private policing. You know, this is the kind of thing that just warms my libertarian, my cold, icy libertarian heart. But private security, private police wouldn't, I mean, come on, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to have the same kind of guns. I mean, if I was a private cop, I'd want the same kind of tools and to be able to use the same kind of tactics that public security would engage in. I'd want to have an AR-15. I'd want to have a sniper rifle. I'd want to have flak jackets and camo and all the sweet little fixings and stuff like that so that I could go home. So just why exactly do you think that private security and private policing are necessarily would be more efficient and less militarized?
Yeah, so you, Austin, might want that. But the question is, does the customer want that? So if you go to Disneyland and you see the numerous security guards there, there's actually more private security in Disneyland, for example, than the city of Anaheim. You don't have militarized private security. You don't have tanks going around with people dressed in mice outfits and riding around in tanks killing the customers because it's bad for business. In Las Vegas, you've got tons and tons of private security, but it's always, almost always done behind the scenes because the customer doesn't want to be harassed. They don't want to be killed by the police. The main difference that I think we need to focus on, and that's really my ideal solution, is to move away from a system of bureaucratic, government, monopolized policing, where the police are basically in charge. They decide what laws to enforce, and become the executioners on the spot. Private security, most private security is unarmed, and it actually does pretty much everything we need. We don't need a tank to deal with shoplifting. We don't need to shoot people who deal with shoplifting. We don't need to drone people who are coming out of a liquor store with $100.
Interesting. So you say in your piece here that the state of North Carolina allows for fully deputized private police who are able to police the properties of their employees. What does that mean? What does that look like?
So we've got varying degrees of private security in the United States, including in many jurisdictions, fully deputized private police. So they have full police powers, and the major difference, however, is that they are paid for privately by different corporations or different private communities rather than by taxpayers. So in certain jurisdictions, and one of the largest ones is the entire state of North Carolina, you can hire what are called company police or sometimes called special police. And these police officers will, say, police a factory, or there's railroad police, or there's university police. And you can observe them in places like Duke University. There's more private police in Duke University than the vast majority of government police departments nationwide. And they don't have the same brutality. They don't have the same homicide rates. I know of no examples of Duke security, Duke police actually, killing anybody, whereas this is actually the norm for government police. It's 140 homicides or deaths per 100,000 officers per year for government police.
So here's my question, though, Ed, and like I'm just I want to go along with you. It sounds great. It sounds great in theory, but what if every institution across the country if every state just privatize their police forces, wouldn't competing police forces just battle it out like warlords? Wouldn't it be like Mad Max all over the country? If private security firms, well, I mean, what's to stop them from going to war with each other?
Well, you could be an advocate of government like you, where the government sets basic minimal rules about saying don't cross certain lines, and as long as you don't cross those lines, you're allowed to operate, and that's basically how the private police operate in places like North Carolina. So you have a system of deputized private police under the jurisdiction of government police. That's one option. I personally don't believe that government exists to create order and to protect property rights. I think the data in this case show that the police have the highest homicide rate of any group that I know of. And so, to me, if you were to take away power from these people, take away their monopoly status, we'd actually move towards a system that's much more peaceful and much less violent than the one that we have now.
Not sure I'm totally convinced, but I do like these instances, for example, these experiments that North Carolina are engaging in, and I would absolutely support this. Now, you've written a book called Private Governance, and that sounds really sexy. I mean, I definitely want to read something like that, and I bet my listeners would like to read about that. Can you tell us about your book, Ed?
Yeah, you should buy it right now, Austin, and stay in this weekend reading it. You're gonna love it. It's coming out with Oxford University Press, and it's documenting examples from history in modern times of private rules and regulations that have created order in our lives and taken the place of where people assume that government needs to enforce contracts. Our government needs to enforce property rights. We can go through history and see tons and tons of examples where all of this is done completely privately. I give some examples in there of private policing. For example, in San Francisco, they came about during the time of the gold rush, where there were basically no police. And even when the police force was created, they were considered very corrupt, sometimes worse than the criminals themselves. And so merchants hired a system of private police, and in many cases, they actually overruled the government police. And to document how a lot of history in the United States, other countries, even in modern times, we see a lot of private rule enforcement, a lot of private law enforcement, if you want to call it that, as well, people taking the place of what most people assume government must do.
Interesting. This is really fascinating stuff, Ed, and it's the kind of thing that, again, my listeners are definitely going to be interested in. So it's been published by Oxford University Press, and we'll be able to get a copy on Amazon. We'll be on Kindle.
It's for sale on Amazon, on Kindle, all the major outlets, and make sure you give it to all your friends for Christmas.
All right. Well, we're going to make sure that our audience knows, and this is Edward Stringham. That's Stringhim. So make sure you go and you type that in Amazon right now and go take a look and pre-order that book. If you can get your hands on a copy, I'm definitely going to get my copy and have a read. And maybe I'll just go ahead and give up on this whole idea of a state. Maybe I'll just take a look at this private governance and see if maybe that's a better way to do things. And I certainly think that we ought to be open to these kinds of ideas. And Ed, I'm glad you came on the show today. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Austin. You're learning every day.
Have a great one, Ed. Take care.
Thanks. See you. Bye.
Bye.